Now there's a wall between us, something there's been lost. I took too much for granted, I got my signals crossed. Just the thing that it all began on a long forgotten morn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
This Cold Harbor Now Home by Hapakitsune. Read by Rose. Gino returns to Pittsburgh at the end of September after the CBA is finally signed, just as the air is starting to turn crisp. It's his favorite time of the year, both for the loveliness of the city in the fall, as well as the feeling of anticipation for the upcoming season. He never gets tired of seeing the city come into view outside the plane window, especially at night when the lights shine bright like stars. His house, when he returns home, is quiet and cool, and he spends a few minutes puttering around, turning the heat back on and calling the newspaper for his subscription. Eventually, he runs out of chores to do, and he ends up standing in the middle of his living room, feeling small and a little lost. He ends up calling James and saying,
I'm back.
And James says,
Dude, what are you doing? Come over, we're watching reruns of The Bachelor.
Gino laughs and agrees, and ends up spending the rest of the night on James's couch with James and Paul, drinking beer and debating which contestant The Bachelor would choose. He manages to stay awake for the drive home, but the moment he hits his bed, he passes out and doesn't think about the emptiness of his house. He has a few days to adjust back to Pittsburgh time and to being in America before practice starts, and he spends most of them sleeping and grocery shopping and working out in his gym. He heads to their first morning practice of the season feeling upbeat and optimistic, happy about his own condition and ready to throw himself into hockey.
Hey, Gino, welcome back, yells Craig, grinning.
And Danger slaps him hard on the back as he heads to his stall. He rolls his eyes at them and takes a seat so he can change for practice.
Should have stayed in Russia,
he jokes.
There, everyone think I am God.
Flower throws a sock at his head and says,
Good thing you came back then, eh? Can't let your head get too big.
Gino laughs and leans down to lace up his skates. Suddenly, Duber looks around and asks,
Where's Sid?
There's a pause as they all look around for Sidney. But he's not at his stall, which looks mostly undisturbed.
Maybe he's on the ice, suggests James after a moment.
Yeah, I thought he was already here, Tanger says.
No, I didn't see him when we came in, Duber says.
Gino?
Gino glances up and sees everyone still in the dressing room staring at him.
What?
Have you heard from Sid? Asks Tanger.
I haven't, not for a few days.
Gino thinks back and realizes that no, he hasn't heard from Sidney since before he got back. That's not necessarily unusual, but as far as Gino knows, Sidney isn't sulking over anything. And usually, Sidney texts him a couple times a day during the off-season.
No, he says.
They all look at each other for a moment, and then Duver says, hopefully,
Maybe he's sick.
But he looks as worried as Gino feels. The last time Gino went this long without hearing from Sidney was during the worst of his concussion, when he was too dizzy to even look at his phone. Probably overslept, Tanger says, optimistically. Gino privately doubts that's the case, but he nods anyway and murmurs his agreement. But Sidney doesn't show up while they're changing, and he doesn't show up while they're stretching, and by the time they're running drills, Gino is sure that Sidney isn't going to show up at all. He takes a break to skate over to Dan and asks,
Hear from Sid?
Dan looks at Gino with a weird, kind of pitying look on his face as he says,
Sidney's sick. He's taking the morning.
Sick, or...
Gino taps the side of his head.
That's nothing to worry about, Gino, Dan says,
which isn't as reassuring as he clearly means it to be.
He'll be back soon.
Gino frowns, sensing that Dan is holding something back. But he doesn't want to bug Dan too much, so he skates back towards James and decides to check up on Sydney later. He drives straight to Sydney's house once practice is over, after failing to convince himself that he should go home and eat lunch first. Anxiety thrums through his veins, a low-level feeling of fear that he can't quite shake. It isn't like Sydney not to come to practice, even if he's sick. Sydney once came to the rink in full thrall of the worst flu Gino had ever seen. His face flushed and his eyes fever bright as he tried to convince Dan, through his coughs, that he was good to skate. The only thing that has ever kept Sydney away is his concussion. Gino has to take a breath before he can screw up the courage to knock on Sydney's door, praying that Sydney just has a cold or something and for once has the common sense to stay away from the ice until he is better. He feels a little bit stupid about even being here to begin with, but he needs to know Sydney is all right. Sydney opens the door, looking slightly manic. Oh, wild eyes and mussed hair. He looks tired and messy, but also reassuringly non-concussed and healthy. He is also, Gino can't help but notice, holding a baby. Gino, oh good, he says, and he thrusts the baby into Gino's arms. Will you hold him a moment? I just got him to stop crying, but he wants to be held, and I need to make lunch. Gino says as Sydney disappears inside his house.
Sid?
Sydney doesn't respond. Gino looks down at the baby in his arms. The baby blinks wide, hazel eyes up at him and babbles nonsense. Well, Gino assumes it's nonsense anyway. For all he knows, the kid could be speaking French. After a moment of standing there, holding the baby, Gino steps inside and calls,
Sid,
again. Sydney comes out of the kitchen, his hair smoothed down with water. Don't shout. He just settled down. He leans in, and there's a weird moment where Gino thinks, and Sydney kisses the top of the baby's head affectionately.
Sid,
Gino says patiently.
Whose baby? Did you steal baby?
What? Sydney stares at him.
No, don't be ridiculous. Come on, I was just about to eat.
The baby in Gino's arm babbles, reaching out towards Sydney, and Sydney's face kind of, well, melts, is the only way Gino can think of to describe it. And he reaches out to take the baby back from Gino. Gino watches, dumbfounded as Sydney rains kisses on the baby's face. You miss me? Sydney asks the baby, grinning widely. Gino's heart does a weird flip, which he has mostly gotten used to when it comes to Sydney. But when he had come over, he had been expecting to find Sydney sick or injured. He is not prepared for seeing Sydney like this. Gino follows Sydney into the kitchen, knowing he isn't going to get an answer until Sydney decides to give one. Sydney is humming, badly, making some kind of sandwich at the counter. Are you hungry? I can make you one too, Sydney says over his shoulder.
No, I make,
Gino says, opening Sydney's fridge. Its shelves are full of bottles and jars he's pretty sure contain baby formula and baby food. Squeezed in towards the back are containers of what Gino mentally labels as adult food. Mostly vegetables and meat and some bread. After considering his options, Gino decides to make a sandwich too, and digs out the ingredients. He takes his time spreading the mustard and cutting the tomatoes, still digesting the image of Sid with a baby and being all, well, parental. He has always known that Sid is good with kids, but this is something else entirely. He hopes that Sydney has a cousin,
He's never mentioned, but he has seen the baby's eyes, and there's no mistaking that particular shade of hazel. Gino has lost sleep thanks to that shade of hazel. Gino finishes making his sandwich and tosses the knife into the sink before going into the dining room. Sydney is sitting next to a high chair where the baby is playing with brightly colored blocks. Sydney is grinning dopily at the baby, not noticing that the filling is falling out of his sandwich.
Sid,
Gino says, hovering awkwardly.
Who is baby?
Sydney looks up and sighs heavily. Yeah, I... Sorry, it's been a crazy couple of days.
Sid,
Gino says again, recognizing that Sydney is about to start rambling to avoid the question. Right, Sydney smiles and reaches up to turn the baby's face towards Gino. Gino, this is my son, Mason.
Mason Crosby?
Gino says, setting down his plate at the seat next to Sydney. He holds his hand out to Mason and grins when Mason grabs his finger.
I am Evgeny Malkin. Nice to meet you.
Mason chirps something that could possibly be hi if Gino is being extremely generous. And Sydney is grinning so hard, Gino is sure his face will cramp. It's actually Mason Crosby Purcell, Sydney says, picking up his sandwich again. Purcell from his mom. That just brings up a whole other list of questions that Gino wants to ask. But he can wait until Sydney is feeling more forthcoming. He carefully tugs his finger free from Mason's grasp, tweaks one of Mason's wispy curls, and sits down on Sydney's other side to eat a sandwich. They eat in silence. Normally, Gino doesn't mind that. In fact, it's one of the things he likes most about Sydney. When he's nervous, Sydney can babble, but most of the time he's fine with sitting quietly. Which means that Gino doesn't have to try to think of the English words for what he wants to say. Right now, though, Gino has about 1,000 things he wants to ask. Most of them along the lines of,
A baby, Sid, really?
He waits until they throw away their paper plates, and Sydney has picked up Mason to ask the first of his questions.
How old?
Sydney smiles again, looking like he just scored a hat trick. About 10 months. Gino digests this.
So, November?
What? Oh, his birthday? Yeah. Sydney jerks his head to get Gino to follow him into the living room. November 20th.
So, when he...
Gino doesn't know what the word he's looking for, so he makes a vague gesture and then pulls at his stomach. Sydney's brows knit together in confusion. When he what?
When you make him,
Gino says, frustrated. Oh. Sydney slowly goes pink, and he ducks his head. Valentine's Day. Gino should find it reassuring that Sydney knows the exact date. It means that he hasn't been having wild sex all the time without the team knowing. But it just reminds him of his own lonely Valentine's Day, which had ended with him calling Oksana over Skype and the two of them drinking vodka in silence.
Oh,
Gino says. He's about to ask about the mother, but Mason suddenly starts crying, little face turning red. Sydney swears under his breath, then looks guilty. Sorry, he misses his mom, Sydney explains. And Mason is, indeed, chanting, Mama, over and over, hitting Sydney's shoulders with his tiny fists.
Give,
Gino says, holding out his arms. Sydney hesitates, then visibly steels himself. Just be careful, Sydney says, seeming unable to hold back the warning. Gino raises his eyebrows at Sydney, who grins sheepishly and shrugs before setting Mason in Gino's arms. Gino hasn't held a baby in a while. He really only gets the opportunity when other players' families come to skates or parties and when he visits family in Russia.
but Mason settles into his arms easily. Mason smells of that slightly sour, milky baby scent. A familiar spot in this whole strange, hallucination-like day. Gino kisses the top of Mason's head and jiggles him gently, saying in Russian,
"Your daddy loves you. You should be good for him."
Mason blinks up at him, still crying, but he quiets. He prods curiously at Gino's face with one tiny finger and hiccups, sniffling. Gino readjusts his grip so he can wipe the edge of his sleeve over Mason's tear-stained face. He sticks his tongue out, crossing his eyes, and Mason giggles. Gino nods.
"Yes, good."
"What are you saying?" Sydney asks, going up on his toes to try to look at Mason's face. He's scowling a little, seeming disgruntled that Gino got him to stop crying.
"Terrible things," Gino says. "Tell him his daddy is bad man and he should cry."
Sydney wrinkles his nose, corners of his mouth twitching up. "Gino."
"Your daddy doesn't understand jokes,"
Gino tells Mason in Russian.
"I will teach you, since he won't."
Mason gurgles happily and hits Gino on the chin. "Da," he says. Then, "Mama." And Gino looks over at Sydney for help. "I'll put him down for his nap," Sydney says, and he takes Mason back, his shoulders slumping in relief the moment Mason is in his arms again.
"Then we talk?"
Gino asks, narrowing his eyes. "Yeah," Sydney says, making a face. "Just give me a minute." Gino goes to sit down on Sydney's couch and pulls out his phone just to check. Flower has sent him a text that's mostly emoticons, but also says, "Sid okay?" And Neil sent him one saying that Dan wanted to know if Sydney was doing all right. Gino replies,
"Everything fine,"
and puts his phone back in his pocket just as Sydney comes back into the living room and throws himself down next to Gino. Up close, Gino can see just how exhausted Sydney is, his eyes bloodshot, the skin beneath bruised-looking, but he still seems upbeat.
"You okay?"
"Tired," Sydney says in a heavy rush of breath, letting his head fall back against the couch cushions. "I forgot how much work babies are." Gino looks at him questioningly. Sydney clarifies, "I helped take care of Taylor when she was a baby, but that was a long time ago."
"Yes,"
Gino says.
"Long time. But you're doing okay, I think."
Sydney smiles and bumps his shoulder against Gino's. "Thanks."
"So?"
Gino says eventually, when it seems like Sydney isn't going to say anything else.
"Mason?"
Sydney nods. "What do you want to know?"
"Who is mother?"
Gino asks immediately. He can count on one hand the number of girls he's seen Sydney with, and he doesn't remember anyone from around Valentine's Day. Sydney tends to be private about his personal life, but he usually tells Gino when he's seeing someone. Gino had thought that Sydney told him everything, actually, but he realizes now that he had been naive to think that. "Aaron," Sydney says, "I brought her to Tanger's birthday party last year." Gino thinks back. He does vaguely remember Sydney coming with a tall, red-haired woman. Cookie had made a joke about Sydney paying top dollar for her, and Gino had socked him in the arm because she seemed perfectly nice.
"Yes, okay."
"I knew her brother at Shattuck, and we met when she moved out here for med school." Sydney shrugs, smiles awkwardly. "She's nice."
"So you decide to have baby?"
Gino says, flatly.
"Not marry?"
"No, it was kind of... we weren't planning on it or anything, but when it happened, we decided... well, she decided."
Sydney babbles, hands twisting in the hem of his shirt. She wanted kids, and I said I'd help if she wanted to keep him, and Sydney shrugs. She did.
But not Mary,
Gina repeats, feeling slightly sick to his stomach. Oh, no, Sydney shakes his head. Aaron doesn't want to be a hockey wife, and we were just, you know, friends. We dated, but it wasn't, you know. He has gone pink again, which Gina really wishes he didn't find charming. We never thought we were going to be together forever. Gino nods, even though he can't imagine that. When he had dated Oksana, he had always pictured a future for them, even when it became increasingly clear that they wouldn't be able to make their relationship work from opposite ends of the world. He had clung to that hope, to that imagined future for them, until the very end.
And where is she?
Swaziland? Sydney says, which confuses Gino until Sydney adds, in Africa. And Gino's brain makes the confusion. She works with Doctors Without Borders. She meant to put off being called in, but they needed her, and she loves it. I couldn't tell her not to go. Sydney sounds faintly guilty, though, and Gino wonders if they had argued before she left, if Sydney had wanted her to stay. Sydney doesn't give pieces of himself away easily, and Aaron must be pretty special for Sydney to agree to a relationship that wasn't meant to last. He pushes that thought away and focuses back on his list of questions.
So now you have Mason,
Gino says.
How long?
She isn't sure, but a few months at least. Sydney is back to smiling again, and Gino is starting to recognize it as his Mason smile. A softer, fonder one than his usual grin. This isn't... It's good, Gino. I usually only see him a couple times a month, once a week if I'm lucky, and he's gotten so big. I'm supposed to be his dad, but I'm always so busy. Gino lets Sydney ramble for a few minutes while he looks around Sydney's house, taking stock. It isn't bad. Perhaps not the ideal place to raise a child who will be learning to walk pretty soon. But he's sure that after some consultation with Sydney's mother and maybe Nathalie, the house will be more livable. Gino has nothing against Sydney's house, exactly, but he is also about 100% sure that Sydney had just recreated the layout from the department store. Gino always feels like he's stepping into a home and garden magazine when he visits Sid. Everything looks nice, but doesn't feel like a home. I should check on him, Sydney says suddenly, and he starts to stand up. Gino flails out his hand and grabs Sydney's wrist.
Sid, wait. Who knows?
About Mason? When Gino nods, Sydney shrugs. My family. Aaron's family. The Lemieux, Dan, my agent, some of the people from the front office, I guess. And you. Gino tries not to be overly pleased at being one of those few, reminding himself that the only reason he knows about Mason is that he showed up at Sydney's house unexpectedly. But he can't stop his smile.
Okay.
You want to come see him? Sydney asks, smiling, and he gestures for Gino to follow him upstairs. The second floor seems more lived in than the first, and more of the rooms appear to be furnished than the last time Gino had visited. Now that Gino thinks about it, Sydney must have bought this house around the time that he learned that Aaron was pregnant. At the time, they had all teased him because it was so much bigger than one person could possibly need, and so many rooms had been left unfurnished for ages. But Gino understands now that Sydney had been waiting for this. He had been waiting for Mason. Gino can't believe Sydney had kept this secret for so long. particularly when he enters the room to see that it's been turned into a full-fledged nursery. The walls have been painted in a wintry landscape that Gino recognizes from Sydney's photos of Cool Harbor. And there's a hockey-themed mobile hanging from the ceiling, turning slowly. It's perfectly, utterly Sydney in every way. Sydney has gone straight for the crib where Mason is still sleeping peacefully and sucking his thumb. Sydney smiles lovingly down at him, face so bright with happiness that Gino just watches Sydney watch Mason for a minute before he clears his throat. "Shh," Sydney whispers. He beckons to Gino. "Come here." Gino moves to stand next to Sydney and looks down at Mason. Now that he's closer, he sees that Mason is curled up on a penguin's blanket, and there's a small stuffed penguin in the corner of the crib, one flipper mostly devoid of fluff and slightly damp with baby spit.
"Definitely your son,"
Gino says, and Sydney laughs, knocking his shoulder into Gino's. "Yeah," he agrees happily. "He really is." Looking at Sydney's soft, fond expression, Gino thinks he can understand why Sydney has kept this a secret. Some people like to share every moment of their lives with people, both good and bad. But Sydney has never been like that. He keeps things close to his chest, clings to his privacy like a life preserver, and becomes more private the more emotionally invested he is. Gino has known Mason for all of maybe an hour, and he already feels a sharp stirring of protectiveness curling around his heart and squeezing tightly. It's similar to the way he feels about Sydney, actually, just more manageable. And if this is how Gino feels, he's surprised Sydney had let him in the house at all.
"When you sleep,"
Gino asks, eyeing Sydney's shadowed eyes.
"You look tired."
Sydney rubs his hand over his eyes. "I don't know. He was fussy last night." Gino sighs and grabs Sydney's shoulders to steer him from the room.
"Go sleep. I watch Mason."
"But," Sydney starts to protest, trying to twist out of Gino's grasp.
"No,"
Gino says firmly.
"Mason needs you to sleep."
Sydney acquiesces, just as Gino knew he would, and trails out of the room even as he throws a look back at Mason, like he's sure he'll vanish. "Call me if he starts crying," Sydney says, before Gino finally manages to get him out the door.
"Of course, Sid,"
says Gino, who has no intention of waking Sydney until the shadows under his eyes have faded.
"I take care of Mason."
"I know," says Sid. "I trust you." He smiles faintly, exhaustion leaking into his expression, and reaches out to squeeze Gino's shoulder before heading down the hall towards his bedroom. Gino watches him go and waits until he hears the click of the door closing all the way before going to sit in the armchair crammed into the corner of Mason's room. There's a book on the seat, bent and battered from much use, and Gino is completely unsurprised to see that it's a parenting book. He opens it up, pulls out his phone so he can look up any words he doesn't recognize, and begins to read. Mason sleeps for about an hour before waking with a fitful cry. Gino goes to the side of the crib and leans down to pick Mason up.
"Hey,"
he says, not bothering to use English. Maybe Mason will pick up some Russian.
"Don't wake your dad, hmm?"
Mason groans and tucks his head into Gino's shoulder. He doesn't seem to be upset or anything, just sleepy still. So Gino starts walking around the room, remembering how that would put his cousin's daughter right to sleep. He realizes, after a moment, that he's humming an old song his father used to sing to him, and he smiles down at Mason.
"You're a sweet kid,"
he remarks as Mason grabs his necklace.
Not whiny like your dad, yeah?
Mason mouths at the chain for a moment before getting bored. He starts straining from Gino's arms, gesturing at the floor. And Gino sets him down on the thick carpet, watching in amusement as Mason makes a beeline for the toy chest.
Need help?
Gino asks when Mason starts to pull himself up the side.
Let me help you.
He sits down cross-legged and tugs Mason into his lap before opening the chest. He goes through the chest and eventually finds a set of finger puppets that make Mason squeal in happiness. He fumbles them onto his hand and bops the end of Mason's nose with the one shaped like a horse. Mason giggles and bats his hands at it. He ends up telling Mason one of the fairy tales he remembered from when he was little, using the little puppets to illustrate the story. He's gotten to the part where Ivan breaks the egg containing the life of Koshi, the deathless, when he hears Sydney's footsteps in the hallway. He smiles at Mason, who isn't really listening to the story, just playing with the mane of the horse puppet, and finishes the story even though he can feel Sydney staring at the back of his head.
And they lived happily ever after,
Gina finishes, and he strokes Mason's hair gently with his bare hand before pulling the puppets off and setting them neatly back into the toy chest. He picks Mason up and gets to his feet. Sydney is at his other side before he's even finished straightening up, looking marginally more put together, but still a little frantic around the eyes. Gino hands Mason over without having to be asked, and watches as Sydney relaxes into his son. Sydney might be doing well as a single parent. Far better than even Gino, who is fully aware that he has more faith in Sydney than almost anyone could have imagined. But as well as he's doing with Mason, it's clear that he isn't doing such a good job of taking care of himself. He's going to need a babysitter, and more adult food, and sleep. Gino can help with at least two of those things right now, but he won't always be around to make sure Sydney is taking good care of himself. He puts that on the list of things to discuss with Sydney later, and says,
"He seems good."
"Yes," Sydney says, cuddling Mason close. After a moment, he looks up. "What were you saying to him when I came in?"
"Telling him story,"
Gino says.
"Fairy tale."
"I don't really know any stories," Sydney says quietly. He reluctantly sets Mason down on the floor after giving him a kiss. Mason immediately starts crawling towards the toys again, and Gino laughs.
"When he comes stay with you?"
Gino asks. "2 weeks ago?" Sydney says, which tallies up with Gino's recollection of the last time he'd heard from Sydney. "I told Dan that I had him, and Nathalie has been taking care of him when I had stuff to do. But he just wouldn't stop crying this morning, and I want him to be happy." He's speaking in a panicked, breathless babble by the end, watching Mason with a lost look on his face. "I've already missed so much." Gino winces and wishes he knew a way to reassure him.
"You're doing good, Sid,"
he says quietly.
"You're here for him, but you need to eat and sleep, yes? You're not a robot."
Sydney rolls his eyes. "I can't take him to the grocery store," he says. "Someone will take a picture, and the next thing I know, I'll be up on..."
"I go,"
Gino says, raising his hand to cut Sydney off.
"And the team will help if you tell."
Sydney scrunches up his nose. "They're going to make fun of me." Gino shakes his head immediately.
"No."
Then he reconsiders.
"Maybe, but not all. They'd be happy for you, Sid. Today you're not show up. We think you're sick."
Sydney winces and says, "I'm sorry. I guess I could tell them, right? I should tell them. I just..." He looks down at Mason. "I don't want to screw anything up."
"You won't,"
Gino says.
"You tell team Mason have 20 new uncles. Not a bad thing."
Yeah, Sydney smiles hesitantly. It hasn't been too long.
You helped a ton,
Gino says, shrugging.
Better now.
Fine, sighs Sydney, sinking down into the armchair next to the crib. I'll tell them next practice. Gino nods, satisfied, and starts for the door. Sydney throws out his hand and says, Wait, where are you going?
You need food, Gino says. I said I go. Do you have list?
No, admits Sydney.
Then I buy what I think you need,
Gino says.
Be back soon.
Wait, Sydney says, and he squirms as he shoves his hand into his pocket. He tosses Gino a keyring. You can let yourself back in. Gino stares down at the keys in his hand for a long moment. They're warm from the heat of Sydney's leg, and he tightens his fingers around them compulsively before nodding, and leaving before Sydney can convince him to stay by pouting or smiling or, well, existing at him.
On his way to the store, Gino makes a quick stop home to pick up the coupons that he clips compulsively while he's watching television. He wanders around for almost an hour and ends up with far more items than he meant to get because he keeps wondering if Sid has baby aspirin or Pediasure and buys it just to be safe. He even throws in some extra diapers and bibs, figuring that he might as well. The cashier looks at his purchases and smiles when she sees his face. She has wispy gray hair and a kind expression, but she doesn't say anything about what he has. Just lets him use more than one coupon on the same items, even though the sign specifically says that's not allowed. When Gino lets himself back into Sydney's, his arms full of shopping bags, the house is quiet and still. He sincerely hopes that means Sydney is asleep, and he's careful not to make a lot of noise as he puts the food away. He goes looking for Sydney after he's finished and finds him in the living room, passed out on the sofa with Mason curled up on his chest. Gino has to stop in the doorway, his heart feeling too big to hold inside him. And he stares at them for a long moment, trying to memorize every detail so he can remember it later. Sydney is smiling a little in his sleep, and Mason has one hand fisted in Sydney's shirt. And Gino just wants to lie down next to them and be there when Sydney wakes up. Instead, he walks over to the sofa because Mason is starting to stir, and sweeps Mason off Sydney's chest as quickly as he can. It's a mark of how tired Sydney must be that he barely even twitches. Just mumbles a little and turns his face into the sofa pillows. Gino allows himself to gently twitch the hem of Sydney's shirt down so that his hip is covered before he turns away. He readjusts Mason in his arms and takes him from the living room in case he starts crying again. But Mason seems pretty happy to be carried, babbling away cheerfully as he hits Gino in the shoulder with his tiny fists. It seems as good an opportunity as ever to investigate what supplies Sydney already has. So Gino tucks Mason securely against him and goes to poke through Sydney's closets. He finds most of the things he's hoping to find, like extra diapers and baby food and a high chair, but no matter where he looks, he can't find a stroller or anything they can use to strap Mason securely to Sydney's chest. He frowns to himself, but it makes sense, given Sydney's reluctance to let anyone know that Mason exists. He wouldn't have bought anything to take Mason outside. That seems like a shame to Gino. He takes Mason out onto the back patio and sits in one of the deck chairs. It's cool outside, not quite cold yet, and Mason is dressed pretty warmly, although Gino finds himself vaguely wishing that Mason had a hat. So they sit outside until Mason starts squirming.
Okay, I take you inside,
he tells Mason, who gurgles in reply. They end up playing peekaboo on the floor of Mason's room, Gino using the penguin's blanket from the crib to hide his face. Mason's laughs are loud enough to carry downstairs, but Gino doesn't have the heart to quiet him, even when he hears Sydney fall off the sofa downstairs. Gino? Sydney calls.
In Mason's room.
Juno calls back. Mason looks up at the sound of his name and claps his hands together.
Yes, you,
Juno says to him. Sydney appears in the doorway a minute later and leans against the frame. You're really good with him, he says, smiling. Juno shrugs.
He easy baby.
No, he's a monster, Sydney says fondly.
He's just on his good behavior with you. He cries on Nathalie all the time, and he even peed on Taylor. Juno laughs at that. He can picture the look on Taylor's face, similar to how Sydney looks when someone shoves a sock in his face. He gently pokes Mason in the side.
You mean to your Tetya?
He asks.
Bad boy.
Mason rolls over onto his back and grins up at them. Juno knows that Mason is too young to really understand what they're saying, but he can't help but see the smile as one of smug pleasure. Thank you for helping, Sydney says. He lowers himself to the ground next to Juno and leans against him to tickle Mason's feet, grinning when Mason giggles. You don't have to, you know.
I know,
Juno says.
I want to.
Sydney smiles up at him, soft and fond, and Juno's heart does that weird clenching too big for his chest thing again. Are you staying for dinner? And that's how Juno ends up making dinner while Sydney feeds Mason, making endearing attempts at getting Mason to open his mouth for food. Come on, buddy, Sydney says.
Car coming into the tunnel.
He makes a very poor attempt at a car noise.
Maybe he goalie.
Juno suggests the third time Mason closes his mouth just before Sydney can get the spoon in. Sydney shoots him a betrayed look. Mason picks that moment to knock over the jar of baby food all over his high chair tray. Oh, damn, Sydney says. And then he immediately looks guiltily at Mason, who is too busy happily drawing his fingers through the spilled food to be paying him any attention. See, Juno? Monster. Sydney cleans up the floor and the high chair and Mason, but completely misses the fact that he has pureed carrot smeared on his face. Juno grins and says,
Come here, Sid.
And he wets the end of the dish towel. Sydney stills when Juno grabs his chin. Juno very carefully doesn't look Sydney in the eyes as he cleans Sydney's face, trying to make this seem like a totally normal thing to do. Thanks, Sydney says when Juno leans back.
No problem,
Juno says. His voice comes out a little rougher and deeper than usual, but thankfully Sydney doesn't seem to notice. They eat dinner in the living room with Mason, the TV playing an episode of Sesame Street that Sydney had TiVo'd. Juno keeps having weird flashbacks to when he had first come to America and had stumbled across the show while living at Sergei's house. He had watched it until the guys had found out and teased him for watching a kid's show, but he still credits it for a good portion of his non-hockey English vocabulary. Mason seems to like the show too, because he claps whenever Elmo is on screen and babbles happily in response to the things Big Bird says. Sydney keeps grinning down at Mason, forgetting his food until Juno elbows him and gestures at his plate. He's amazing, isn't he? Sydney asks later as they clean up the kitchen. Mason has had one diaper change that Juno watched in horrified amazement. Now he's sitting in a little swing that Sydney has set up near the kitchen table, gently bouncing up and down. He seems to be getting sleepy, and Juno has to admit that he feels the same. A morning skate is enough to make him inclined to sleep early anyway, and adding Sydney and an infant on top of that is a lot for one day.
He very smart,
Juno says, even though he really has no idea how well Mason is progressing.
Very cute.
I'm trying to teach him to say dad, Sydney says, but it's not sticking. I don't know. Maybe it's because I didn't get to see him that much until now.
He leans over so that he's in Mason's line of sight and says, "Say Dad, Mason." "Bah," says Mason, clapping his hands.
"Or Papa,"
says Gino.
"Can you say Papa?"
"Baba," says Mason, and Sydney throws back his head in a laugh. "Nice try, Gino," Sydney says, and he bumps his hip against Gino's before going to lift Mason out of the swing. Gino follows Sydney back to the nursery and waves as Mason is settled back into his crib, big hazel eyes blinking sleepily.
"Night, Mason. Don't let bedbugs bite."
Sydney shudders and says, "Don't even joke." He tickles Mason gently. "Can you say goodbye to Gino, Mason?" "Bah," Mason says.
"Bah,"
Gino says back solemnly. He reaches down and lets Mason grab at his finger for a moment.
"I come back."
"Will you?" Sydney asks, looking at him with wide eyes.
"You're my friend,"
Gino says with a shrug.
"And I like Mason."
"Okay," Sydney says. He punches Gino awkwardly in the shoulder. And Gino thinks wryly that it's so perfectly Sydney that he's fine with hugs when it comes to babies or goal celebrations. But take him off the ice and he's at a loss. "You're the best."
"I know,"
Gino says, grinning. Sydney gives him a little shove. "Get out of here," he says. And Gino gives him a wave before heading for the door.
"You come to practice?"
he asks, before he leaves the nursery. "Yeah, and you're right, I do need to tell the guys, so I'll do that on Wednesday."
"Good,"
Gino says.
"Sleep good, Sid."
"You too," Sydney replies, and Gino gets the hell out of there. Gino is determined to go home and just sleep, but he finds himself pulling out his laptop and opening up his web browser to look for baby stuff. It's too late, or too early, depending on how you look at it, to call his mom, so he leaves the browser open on the page for later. He goes for a run around the block, eager to stretch his legs and clear his head a little. By the time he gets back, it's just barely an acceptable time for Gino to call his mom. "Eugenie," she says when she picks it up, "do you have any idea what time it is?"
"This is important,"
he says guiltily. She sighs. "Is this about Sydney?" Sometimes Gino regrets telling his mother anything.
"No, well, yes, but not like that."
"Mm-hmm," she hums doubtfully. "So, what is it this time?"
"I am looking at strollers, and I don't know what's best,"
Gino blurts out, and then he ends up having to explain the whole messy situation. By the time he's finished, his mother is ominously silent. And he ends nervously with,
"So now I want to get him a stroller and maybe one of those things you use to strap the baby to your chest."
She doesn't say anything for a moment, the silence stretching out as wide as the physical distance between them. Then she says, "Zenya, what are you doing?"
"I have no idea,"
Gino admits, dropping his head into his free hand.
"He needs me."
"Sweetheart," she says, sighing. "I know he is your best friend in Pittsburgh, but you don't have to do this for him."
"I know,"
he says, staring unseeingly at the webpage full of strollers.
"That isn't... Mama, you know it isn't about that."
"Yes," she says dryly. "The last time I saw one of my sons acting this stupid was when your brother fell head over heels for that girl in St. Petersburg."
"I..."
Gina starts.
"It isn't... That isn't what I meant."
He doesn't sound convincing, even to himself. and his mother's very loud snort tells him she isn't overly impressed by his lying attempt either.
Then yet, darling, his mother sighs. You know that if you let yourself get invested, it will be harder to give up on him and move on.
Gino bites down his instinctive, childish response, which is to insist that he doesn't want to give up and move on, and says instead,
I know.
Well, as long as you know, she says. Now, what brands of stroller were you looking at? With his mother's guidance, Gino ends up buying more stuff than he should, and sends it to deliver overnight to Sydney's before he crawls into bed and passes out. Exhaustion tugging him down and into sleep before he has a chance to worry about maybe telling Sid about the order. His phone rings upsettingly early the next morning, and he knocks it off his bedside table before he's actually able to claw it up towards his face.
Duh.
Gino, Sydney says, sounding exhausted. Why did I just get a package of baby supplies delivered to my front door? Gino squints at the clock and says,
Did not know it would be so early.
Is this a stroller? Sydney asks, shocked. Gino, you didn't have to... a sling. In the background, Mason starts crying loudly. Gino sits up and rubs at his eyes, stomach churning with guilt.
I come over.
No, Gino, Sydney starts. But Gino has already hung up. He shoves his blankets off and drags the first clothes he touches out of his closet on before taking the stairs as quickly as his knee will let him. Sydney answers the door with a crying Mason in his arms and says, You have to send the stuff back.
Why? You don't like it?
Gino asks, frowning.
I pick best brand.
No, it's not that. You shouldn't be buying stuff for me like this, Sydney says, helplessly. I told Aaron I could do this myself.
Everyone needs help sometimes, Sid,
Gino says disapprovingly. He holds out his arms.
Give me Mason.
Sydney sighs and readily passes over Mason, who shrieks so loudly that Gino is sure the neighbors will wake up. Gino hurries into Sydney's house, wincing, and says,
Mason, shh.
Mason screams some more, piercing as a goal horn. Sydney groans and drops his head into his hands. I don't know why he's so upset. I checked his diaper. He isn't hungry. I don't think it's teething pains.
Maybe he need walk,
Gino suggests.
Go get him dressed. I do stroller.
He kisses the top of Mason's head and jiggles him a little before passing him back to Sydney. A walk? Sydney asks, squinting doubtfully. What if someone sees? Gino shrugs.
Still early. We can ask office if people talk.
Okay, Sydney says, as Mason continues to scream. It'll be nice to get out. Gino raises his eyebrows at Sydney, who goes a little red, and then leans down to take the stroller out of the box. The instructions are in English, but Gino can mostly understand them if he looks at the pictures. Or, at least, he thinks he can understand them when he first reads them. But halfway through trying to get one of the wheels on, he thinks maybe he should have examined the reviews online a little more closely to pick one he didn't have to assemble himself. He swears under his breath and smacks at the wheel. It pops in, finally, and he sits back, relieved.
Okay,
he mutters to himself.
Now the rest.
Sydney comes out with a warmly dressed and slightly calmer Mason, while Gino is cursing fluently at the canopy for the stroller, which is just not strapping in place, and says, You better not be teaching Mason bad words in Russian.
He learned plenty bad when he meet Flower,
Gino says absently, still fiddling with the stroller.
I don't know how this work.
You've got it on backwards. Hang on, Sydney says. He kneels down and lets Mason crawl around on the floor as he looks at the stroller. Here, like this. It seems ludicrously easy when Sydney doesn't.
Think you so smart.
You're the one who couldn't put a stroller together, Sydney says, lunging towards Mason, who is doing his level best to make a run for the kitchen. Come on, buddy. We're going for a walk.
No!
Mason shrieks as Sydney seizes him around the waist. Mason, come on, sighs Sydney. It won't be bad. Mason flails his limbs wildly, trying to get away, knocking his hat off as he does. Sydney grimly hangs on, mouth pressed in a thin line.
Mason,
Gino says, moving forward so Mason can see his face. He reaches out and strokes Mason's head before replacing his soft blue hat. He hums a little until Mason quiets, staring at him. And then he takes Mason from Sydney and straps him into the stroller. He likes you better, Sydney says miserably, hovering over Gino's shoulder as Gino adjusts the stroller straps.
I just knew,
Gino says, and then he caught the strange, sad look on Sydney's face.
Sid, what you not telling me?
Sydney sighs. He was so good for you yesterday, and I think maybe it is because you're new. I don't know. Gino crosses his arms and waits for Sydney to actually answer him. I think he still misses his mom, Sydney says after a moment. He knows me, but she's not here, and you, at least, distract him.
I know he's little, Gino says. But what about Skype?
Sydney rubs the back of his head and nods. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, Aaron's pretty busy, and I don't know what their internet is like, but yeah, I'll send her an email. Mason starts hitting the side of the stroller and crying again, wailing loudly. Gino sighs and starts steering it out of the house, Sydney trailing behind him. We're going to wake the neighbors, Sydney points out.
They live, says Gino.
Sydney throws his head back in one of his high-pitched, hiccuping laughs and munches Gino in the shoulder. You're going to make them hate me, he says. He nudges Gino aside so he can push the stroller. Gino relinquishes it easily, glad to see Sydney smiling again. Mason quiets when they finally make it outside and sniffles quietly as Sydney guides him down the path towards the sidewalk. Gino keeps pace with him, keeping an eye on Mason to see if he's feeling better. They do one complete circuit around the block before Mason's crying completely stops. Sydney lets out a grateful breath before stopping and kneeling in front of the stroller to look Mason in the eye. Hey, buddy, Sydney says, reaching out to wipe Mason's face with the edge of his sleeve. Feeling better? Mason mumbles something incoherent and closes his eyes. Sydney leans in to kiss Mason's cheek. Gino lunges forward to keep the stroller steady and says, We'll talk to your mom soon, buddy, I promise. Mama, mama, says Mason. Sydney sighs and chucks him under the chin. Good boy, he says. They head back to the house as the wind starts to pick up. Pittsburgh is still clinging to the last of the summer sun, but it's just cold enough that Gino wishes he had grabbed a sweater when he had left his house. Spending winters in America has weakened him, as his brother likes to tease, and he gets cold far easier than he used to. He shivers at a particularly chilly gust and rubs at his arms. Are you cold? Sydney asks, frowning. He, of course, is very sensibly dressed in an actual jacket, while Gino has only his thin cotton t-shirt. Where's your sweater?
Home.
Gino picks up his pace.
Let's go inside.
Sydney takes Mason back up to bed while Gino goes through the box of stuff he had ordered. He's a little embarrassed by the sheer amount of stuff he's bought, but he firmly maintains that Mason needs things like sippy cups and bibs, especially ones that have penguins on them. Every little kid deserves someone to spoil them.
He hears Sydney coming downstairs, but continues sorting out the box until something soft and thick lands on him. He jumps in surprise and twists around, reaching up to rub the edges of the sweater between his fingers. "It should fit you," Sydney says, and he bites his lip as Gino pulls a sweatshirt off his back and looks at it. It's one of Sydney's ancient penguin sweatshirts, worn and soft with age. Gino remembers seeing Sydney wear it around hotels and dressing rooms, remembers the way it had been just a little too big for him, the sleeves drooping to cover his hands. He must be quiet for too long because Sydney shifts, looking away from Gino, and says,
"I just thought you were cold."
"Thanks,"
Gino says after a moment, and he tugs the sweatshirt over. It smells like Sydney's sweat and detergent, and a little like Mason, all baby powder and milk. And Gino has to resist the urge to tuck his nose into the collar of it. Sydney relaxes and crouches down next to Gino. "What is all this stuff?"
"Stuff for Mason."
Gino hands Sydney a bib.
"For when he eats."
Sydney strokes his fingers over the pattern on the bib, face gone soft and pensive. "You're a good friend," he says at last. "Thank you." Gino shrugs and says,
"No problem."
And that, really, is the problem. Somehow, Sydney manages to beat Gino to practice, even though he has to drop Mason off with the Lemieux. And when Gino walks in, Duper is saying, "Hey, man, don't just not show up like that." He punches Sydney in the shoulder, but his brow is creased with concern. Sydney winces. "I'm sorry about that," he says. "I promise I had a good reason." Duper raises his eyebrows. "And that reason was..." "I want to wait until the rest of the guys are here," Sydney says instead of answering. Duper nods and flicks Sydney's ear gently before returning to his stall to change into his practice clothes. Gino catches Sydney's eye and gives him an encouraging smile as the other team members start trickling in. Sydney kind of looks like he wants to vomit, pale and sweat beating at his hairline. He clears his throat once or twice, and Gino wants to go over and tell him it'll be all right, but he has the feeling that that would stand out more than anything else. "Hey, guys," Sydney says once everyone has arrived, and the room instantly goes still. Sydney is a pretty quiet captain. He prefers doing things one-on-one to giving speeches. So, on the rare occasion when he does ask for their attention, they give it to him. I know you were worried yesterday," he starts. And Gino sees Flower opening his mouth to heckle. Gino throws a sock at him and shakes his head. I promise it's not me, I just..." He looks helplessly at Gino, who shrugs and waits. He knows Sydney can do this once he works up the right words. Sydney takes a deep breath. "I have a baby. A son," Sydney says, and he starts talking quicker. His name is Mason, and he's 10 months old, and his mom is out of the country right now, so I'm taking care of him, and..." He stutters to a stop. "Yeah, that's it." There's a brief pause, then Duper asks, "Do you have pictures?" And all the guys who have kids crowd around Sydney to get a look at his phone. Gino smiles a little and returns to getting suited up for practice. Flower is looking at Gino, eyes narrowed slightly. Gino does his best to ignore him, taking his time to replace his skates while everyone asks Sydney questions. But before he can slip away to the ice, Flower grabs his arm. "You knew," he says, narrowing his eyes.
"I only just found out," Gino says defensively. "I check on him, find baby."
Flower looks skeptical.
"I noticed he did not mention much about the mother."
"Yes,"
Gino says calmly.
We don't see many of Sydney's girlfriends, Flower says, raising his eyebrows like Gino is supposed to get something from that.
Sid's business,
Gino says gruffly.
Not for me to tell.
But he's okay, Flower asks.
Yeah,
says Gino.
He is okay.
Good. Flower knocks his glove against Gino's shoulder. Keep him that way.
I'm not his babysitter,
protests Gino, and Flower just rolls his eyes. Practice is good. Everyone seems a lot looser now that they know what's up with Sydney, and the rookies are doing better with Sydney around to give them quiet words of advice in tandem with Dan's coaching. Gino doesn't say much to Sydney, just gives him some of his observations from the day he missed. Sydney nods, eyes slightly narrowed as he watches the guys on the ice. Thanks, Gino, he says eventually, and Gino nods before pushing off to join James. Sydney is the first one off the ice for once, and he looks sheepish as he's leaving. But Cookie slaps him on the back and says,
"It's hard leaving them when they're that young, eh?"
Yeah, Sydney says, going slightly red.
Thanks, guys.
It's embarrassingly heartfelt, but they're all kind of used to Sydney randomly bursting out with the emotion. Although, usually it has to do with hockey.
Thanks, I really appreciate it.
Good luck, someone else calls. Sydney grins dorkily, waves, and slips out. Gino takes off his skates and rests his elbows on his knees for a minute, breathing out slowly. Flower shoots him a curious look, and Gino shrugs at him before laboriously getting undressed.
Is that your sweatshirt?
Flower asks as Gino gets dressed again. Gino looks down and realizes he hadn't given Sydney his sweatshirt back. Flower is looking at him with that unnerving goalie stare he uses when he wants to scare information out of people. But Gino meets his eyes evenly and says,
Yes.
Flower narrows his eyes suspiciously, and Gino hurries out of the locker room. Once he's outside, he lets himself lift the sleeve to his face so he can breathe in the smell of Sydney just once. He catches up with Sydney in the parking lot, just before Sydney gets in his car.
Forget sweatshirt,
Gino says, plucking at the front.
Want it?
Sydney looks at him for a minute, and then shakes his head.
No,
he says. Keep it. He smiles, pats Gino's shoulder, and gets in his car. See you tomorrow?
Yes,
Gino says. And he stands there as Sydney pulls out of his space, watching him go. Things go back to normal, more or less. Sydney is exactly the same in practice. Exactly the same when he grabs lunch with Gino and Flower and Chris. Exactly the same when some of the guys insist on dragging him out to celebrate his fatherhood before the season starts. The only difference, really, is that when he excuses himself, he uses Mason as his reason.
I hate that you have a real excuse now, James says morosely,
leaning heavily against the bar.
So boring, and we can't even chirp you for it.
Sydney shrugs carelessly and looks around. Anyone need a ride? Gino, who had tagged along with James, says,
Me.
Lame, yells TK, and Gino flips him off as he follows Sydney outside.
You don't have to keep me company, Sydney says, glancing back over his shoulder. If that's why you're coming.
No,
Gino says, which is only partially a lie.
Tired.
Sydney nods and unlocks his car. We have a Skype date with Aaron tonight, he explains. We'll go pick up Mason first, if that's okay, and then I'll drop you off.
Sure,
Gino says.
Happy to see him again.
Sydney smiles.
He'll be happy to see you.
The inside of Sydney's car screams baby, from the car seat in the back to the floor littered with toys. Sydney looks slightly embarrassed by it, but just shrugs and says,
As long as no reporters see inside.
Gino snorts and picks the stuffed tiger off the passenger seat.
Sid is sup,
he says,
moving the tiger's mouth so it looks like it's talking. Sydney rolls his eyes and takes it from Gino's hands. Yeah, yeah, he says, but he's smiling. Mason is asleep when they arrive at the Lemieux house, fast asleep in a crib upstairs. Nathalie seems surprised to see Gino, but she hugs him and asks how his parents are when Sydney scoops Mason up into his arms. The change is immediate. Tension Gino hadn't even realized Sydney was carrying running out of him in one relieved exhale of breath. Gino, Nathalie says, and he jerks his gaze over to her, realizing he has completely lost the thread of what she's saying.
Sorry,
he says, flushing. She laughs, patting his arm, and says, it's all right. I'm glad to see Sydney has help. She watches Sydney fondly for a moment, then turns to Gino and asks, very seriously, has he decided what he's going to do when you're on the road? Gino says slowly. I love Mason, but I can't look after him all the time, Nathalie explains. I told Sydney, but I think he's trying to ignore it. He said something about Mason not liking new people, but really...
Sid don't like new people, yes,
Gino agrees.
So we need to find Nanny?
I think that would be a good idea, yes, Nathalie says. Try putting an ad out now, before the season properly starts, all right?
I talk to Sid,
Gino says.
Make him find someone.
Good. Nathalie reaches up to pat Gino's shoulder affectionately. Thanks for helping him out, Gino. It's very sweet of you. Gino bumps his head awkwardly and catches Sydney's eye. Mason has his head tucked into Sydney's neck, hands opening and closing slowly. Smiling, Gino gives Mason a finger to grab at and watches Mason's eyes flutter open to regard Gino sleepily. Mason gnaws on Gino's fingertip thoughtfully for a minute with his brand new tooth. Sydney had come into practice bleary-eyed and a little snappish for a few days while it had been coming in, complaining about the crying. Then solemnly hands it back. We need to get him home, Sydney says distractedly, looking around like he thinks he may have forgotten a second child somewhere. Gino tries not to take the we as anything more than a casual slip, but he can't help the warm, bubbly feeling that spreads through his chest anyway. They say their goodnights to Nathalie and take Mason to the car. Sydney straps Mason into the car seat with familiar ease and kisses him on the forehead. When he turns around and sees Gino staring, he turns red and crosses his arms defiantly. What?
You are a good dad,
Gino says frankly. And Sydney goes even redder. Knowing he's probably being absurdly obvious, Gino looks away so Sydney can't read his expression.
Happy for you.
Thank you, Sydney says quietly. He touches Gino's arm just above the elbow. You've been really great. I appreciate everything you've done.
I haven't done much,
Gino protests. Sydney gives him a skeptical look as he closes the car door.
Really, Sid?
Okay, Sydney says, shaking his head, and he walks around the front of the car to get into the driver's seat. Once he's out of sight, Gino allows himself, just once, to touch the spot above his elbow. He doesn't bring up what Nathalie said until they're back at Sydney's house, and Mason is safely asleep in his crib, sucking meditatively on the wing of his penguin toy. Sydney leans against the crib, watching Mason and smiling faintly. And Gino decides it's better to get it over with.
Nathalie say you need babysitter,
he says. And Sydney flinches, hard, his knuckles going white on the bars of the crib.
For when we travel.
There's a long pause where Sydney doesn't look up, just stares down at Mason. And then he lets out a slow, noisy breath.
There's a long pause where Sydney doesn't look up, just stares down at Mason. And then he lets out a slow, noisy breath.
I know.
When nothing else seems forthcoming, Gino prompts.
So?
So I've been putting it off, Sydney snaps. Though he keeps his voice low. I know I should, but... He sighs again. It's hard enough leaving him with Nathalie. It was hard leaving him with Aaron, and she's his mom. He reaches down and carefully flicks the penguin's wing out of Mason's mouth. I'll find someone. This, of course, leads to several days of Sydney whining about how hard it is to find a nanny, especially one who can stay overnight. Duper jokes about getting Max to ask Briere for advice, which makes Sydney scowl and insist that he doesn't need the help of the Flyers. God. Fortunately, one day, towards the end of camp, Sydney comes in smiling, with the news that he has found a suitable candidate, and that she doesn't seem insane or anything.
She's Canadian, too, Sydney adds.
Like, this is the most important part.
Good news, says Gino dryly. Not crazy and Canadian.
It is a good thing, Sydney protests, but he seems too pleased by his success to be annoyed by Gino's teasing. Gino, for his part, keeps his head down and tries to focus on hockey. If he sometimes lies awake and thinks about Sydney alone in his house with Mason, no one else has to know. In the meantime, they have a season coming. He can't spend all his time worrying about Sydney. Only James seems to pick up on Gino's mood, and he picks up his own pace to match, dragging Eric and Beau along with them.
You're going to kill us, man, James says after the last practice before the preseason, wiping the sweat off his forehead.
Gino flicks him with his towel.
You're just lazy, he says. Don't know real work when you see it.
James squawks in protest, and then Sydney jumps in to tell them that they're looking good, and Gino feels his cheeks heat. He looks away and busies himself with unlacing his skates. When he looks up, Neil is watching him curiously.
Really, though, James says quietly, we're ready.
Yeah,
says Gino.
He grins at James.
We are.
He returns home that afternoon feeling pleasantly tired and optimistic about the upcoming season. The house, which has been feeling uncomfortably big since his return from Russia, fits better tonight. It feels like he's properly coming home. Hockey has always had a way of doing that, though. When hockey is going well, everything else in Gino's life seems to settle nicely into place. He eats dinner while watching the DVD of Russian soap operas his mom sends him for when he's feeling nostalgic. It isn't really a substitute for having someone to talk to, but it's comforting just to let the white noise of a familiar language wash over him. He calls his parents and talks to them while he does the dishes, and is feeling more at home than he has since he came back to Pittsburgh as he goes upstairs to start packing for their upcoming trip to Chicago. His phone rings as he's pulling out his clothes.
Hello?
He asks, sandwiching it between his shoulder and ear as he half turns around to look down the staircase. Oh, good, Sydney says. He sounds hassled, frustration bleeding at the upper range of his voice. I'm really sorry to ask this, but I haven't had time to go grocery shopping, and I told Simone there would be food for her this weekend. Could you... I know this is inconvenient, but Mason already knows you, so could you come watch him while I go to the store? Gino hesitates, thinking of how his mother will scold him if he says yes, and wondering how much she would scold him if he said no.
Yes,
Gino says after a moment, and then immediately wonders if he had been born without self-preservation. Or if America had stripped it away from him along with his tolerance of the cold. Thank you. Sydney lets out a relieved breath. See you in a few minutes. The line goes dead, and Gino swears to himself and heads back down the stairs,
muttering to himself. When Gino arrives at Sydney's house, Sydney's hair is standing on end and he's a little wild-eyed. "He's being a complete nightmare," Sydney groans. "I'm sorry to leave him with you like this, but I can't take him with me."
"I go to the store for you," Gino offers.
"No, it's better if I go. I'll be in and out in a half an hour, I swear," Sydney says, rooting through a little bowl on the table next to his door before pulling out his keys. He rubs his hand over his face, shoving his hair off his forehead. "Thank you, Gino. I'll pay you back somehow."
"No problem,"
Gino says, waving his hand.
"Where is Mason?"
"In his room," Sydney says. "He's teething again. Call me right away if he looks like he's in really bad pain or he gets a fever or anything, okay?"
"Yes, Sid,"
Gino says patiently.
"I take care of Mason. Go."
Sydney flashes him a quick smile before slipping out the door. Gino locks it behind him, then heads upstairs to go look for Mason. Mason pulled himself upright on the bars of his crib, looking like nothing so much as a very tiny jailbird. The moment he sees Gino, he starts to cry, as piercing as a siren, and Gino hurries over to pick him up. He suspects that this is Mason's plan, but he doesn't care. He hates watching Sydney be upset. There's no way he can stand by and watch a tiny version of him cry. The shoulder of his shirt is very quickly soaked through with tears and snot. Gino jiggles Mason, humming quietly into his ear, but Mason just keeps on sobbing, tiny hands grabbing at him. For lack of any better plan, Gino decides to walk around the house, humming while he tries to remember the words of the lullaby his father had used to sing to him and Dennis when they were sad or tired. He sings quietly as he takes Mason down the stairs, letting the rhythm of the steps rock him gently. Mason's tears seem to be ebbing when Gino reaches the bottom step. But when he stops singing, Mason looks up at him, eyes narrowed.
"So you like my singing," Gino says. "You have bad taste, little man."
He takes a deep breath and starts in on the second verse of the lullaby. His shirt is basically a lost cause, so he uses the hem of his sleeve to wipe the snot from Mason's face. Smiling when Mason wrinkles his nose in a manner reminiscent of Sydney. Mason sighs and settles back against Gino's chest while Gino sings. He has to quickly invent some lyrics when he forgets how the fourth verse goes, and his voice sort of peters out towards the end, but Mason doesn't seem to mind. Sydney returns home almost exactly half an hour after he had left, stomping noisily through the hall and into the kitchen. Gino gets up from the couch, Mason drowsing away on his shoulder, and goes to see if Sydney needs any help. "You got him to sleep," Sydney says when he sees Gino. He sags against the counter and knuckles at his eyes. "God, I thought he'd never sleep."
"Not really asleep,"
Gino says, turning so Mason can get a look at Sydney.
"See, Mason, Papa is here."
Mason reaches out towards Sydney and says, "Dada." Gino freezes. For a moment, he's convinced he had imagined it. But then he looks at Sydney and sees that Sydney's mouth has fallen open, his eyes very huge. He swallows visibly. "Did he?" "Dada," Mason says again, more insistently this time. "Dada, dada." "I'm here," Sydney says instantly, reaching out, and Gino hurriedly passes him over. "Hey, buddy, you said it." "Dada," Mason mumbles, squirming to a more comfortable position in Sydney's arms. Sydney bites at his lower lip, still looking poleaxed as he strokes Mason's hair with a shaking hand. "Gino," Sydney says, voice cracking a little, and Gino is over there before he quite knows what he's doing, folding Sydney and Mason into his arms. Sydney is shaking a little, fizzy bubbles of laughter spilling out of him. "He said it, Gino."
"I hear,"
Gino says into Sydney's hair.
Very smart boy.
He called me Dad, Sydney says, and he starts laughing in earnest, bright and delighted. Mason starts to giggle too, and Gino grins helplessly. Sydney kisses Mason's head, and Gino tightens his embrace for a moment before stepping back and letting Sydney have his moment. Mason seems to know that he did something good, because he's smugly happy all the way up until he crashes again, passing out with his face mashed into Sydney's neck. Gino volunteers to finish putting away the groceries while Sydney takes Mason back to bed, and Sydney gives him another smile. The bag of onions in Gino's hands slips. The refrigerator is neatly organized according to some convoluted system of Sydney's, and Gino spends a minute trying to work it out before defaulting to his own standards and shoving the onions in the vegetable crisper. He does his best to put everything in its place, but he figures Sydney will probably rearrange it later in any case. Once the groceries are all safely away, Gino hunts down Sydney and finds him standing in the doorway to Mason's room, unmoving. Gino cautiously taps Sydney on the shoulder.
Sid?
Now I really don't want to leave, Sydney says, without turning around. I thought it would be okay, you know? He likes Simone, but I wish...
I know,
Gino says, when it becomes apparent that Sydney can't get it out.
Don't want to miss.
I was fine when he was living with Aaron, Sydney burst out. I saw him at least once a week, and I love him and everything, but I wasn't expecting to. He turns to look at Gino. I thought it would be easier, after a while, to get used to leaving him. But it hasn't. It's gotten worse. Gino sighs and wraps an arm around Sydney's shoulders, tentatively. When Sydney doesn't shrug him off, he tightens his grip.
It's family, Sid. You love them, never want to leave. But you have to.
It isn't that. I think if I have to choose between Mason and hockey, Sydney says, and he sounds frightened, his face very pale, I would choose Mason without even thinking.
Good,
Gino says firmly. He covers Sydney's mouth when Sydney opens it to respond.
I know Sid love hockey. Whole world knows Sid love hockey. But it is just game, Sid. Mason is your son. Of course he matter more.
I didn't mean that it didn't make sense, Sydney says, when Gino uncovers his mouth. It's just... change.
And Sid don't like change,
Gino agrees, smiling to himself. Sydney wrinkles his nose, but smiles anyway.